the full story. I'm Rebecca Saran in for Ron Ropiak, who is on vacation for the next few days. The 2020 census forms are being printed as we speak, but the controversy over adding a question about citizenship status is still brewing. The Trump administration has pushed to include the question. They say it will help to protect the voting rights of minorities in the country. Advocacy groups sued to block it. They say it could cause minorities as well as immigrants, both legal and undocumented, to avoid participating in the census. A faulty count could affect how much money a state receives from the federal government and how many representatives it has in the U.S. House. The case went all the way to the Supreme Court, and last month the court ruled to block the question. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the majority opinion. He said the reason the Trump administration gave to add the question was inadequate. At first, the Trump administration complied with the court's decision, and then the president tweeted. He said the administration is absolutely moving forward with the question. And now the country waits to see what will happen next. What does this all mean for the census in our region? That's what we're going to explore today. Before he left on his vacation, Ron sat down with Connecticut's Lieutenant Governor Susan Bizewitz. She heads up the Complete Count Committee and has been going around the state preparing residents for the census. Here's their conversation.
Lieutenant Governor Bizewitz, thanks for coming in today. It's always nice to see you.
It's a pleasure to be here in this beautiful studio.
To start, what's your reaction to the Supreme Court ruling?
Our reaction last week was that it was good for Connecticut. It was a victory for Connecticut because Connecticut is a state that is home to many undocumented people, thousands of them. And we were very concerned that the controversy over whether a citizenship question should be included in the United States Senate was casting a climate of fear or a cloud over it. And we were happy when the Supreme Court said the question should not be included. Unfortunately, the administration has changed its position. The Department of Justice said after the Supreme Court decision that they were not going to pursue adding the question. There's been a reversal in that position, which is disappointing. Because here's the issue. We need a complete count of every person in Connecticut pursuant to our United States Constitution, which since 1790 has dictated that we count every person. It wasn't that we count every citizen. It's count every person. And so it just makes it difficult for me, as the leader of the Complete Count Committee for Connecticut that was started by Governor Lamont and I in February in anticipation of the 2020 census. We want to count everyone, and it's discouraging because if you take this controversy over the citizenship question, which the governor and I believe is an attempt to discourage undocumented people from coming forward, and you take that along with the threats of ICE raids in Connecticut and across the country, along with the very poor treatment of children and families at the border, it's discouraging for people who are not citizens. And so we're concerned about that because of the communities that need to be counted the most, Bridgeport and its area suburbs, you might be discouraged. People might be discouraged from coming forward.
The president has tweeted that what the court did shows that we are in, using his words, he said, a very sad time. I know you spoke about it a little bit just now, yeah. But why do you think the president wants a citizenship question?
I think he is trying to discourage people from immigrant communities and from communities of color from coming forward and being counted. And I think he's trying to rob resources that would traditionally go to urban areas. And he's trying to discourage one of the most vibrant ethnic communities in our state and in our country, which is our Latino communities, from coming forward. And the census is not for gerrymandering or for partisan political purposes. It's to get a complete count of who we are as a country.
The president has pointed out that there are other countries, some allies of ours, Canada, Australia, Ireland, Germany, Mexico. They have a citizenship question. And he asks, why shouldn't the U.S. do the same?
Well, right now, our Constitution dictates since 1790 that there be a count of each person. And citizenship status was never a part of that count. Right now, four federal courts have ruled that the citizenship question should not be on it. So has our United States Supreme Court. There's been some suggestion that the president may issue an executive order requiring the question. And I would just say that an executive order does not trump the Supreme Court's decision.
Is there any way, without doing the census, from numbers maybe that you have been given, to figure out how many undocumented citizens or non-citizens are currently in Connecticut?
The census is the best way because there is no, there can be no other count. This is a national event that happens every 10 years, and it is a monumental effort because we have to count more than 3.5 million people in our state, and the census is going to count people in four ways, and two of the ways are different than in the past because this is the first census where people can fill out the forms online, so that's, we've never had that before. Second, for the first time in the history of the census, there will be 800 numbers where people can call and fill out their census over the phone. Mm-hmm. And there will be 140 million census forms mailed, one for each household in the state. That's always been the case. And there will be the census enumerators, the people who knock on your door, those folks will be out in the summer of next year, and they will be following up with households that have not responded.
And I know when you and I have spoken in the past, you were stressing confidentiality.
That's right. And people may not know this, but this is an important message to get out. Federal law protects the personal information that people give on the census forms. The census can only be used for statistical purposes, so no federal law enforcement or no other federal agency can use any personal information that is put forward by someone who fills it out. And I think that's important. And the Census Bureau, its workers and civil servants who work for the census may not use that information, and there are very heavy fines and criminal penalties associated for any kind of breach of that data.
But you said it at the very beginning that with everything that's going on nowadays, now we're hearing about facial recognition scanning and motor vehicles across the country. You're talking about the raids by ICE or planned raids by ICE. Obviously, the problems that are going on at our southern border. If I'm hearing all these reports and I'm undocumented, I'm probably pretty scared at this point.
That's right. And I think this is just part of a whole group of strategies. But I think the citizenship question is out there to drive down turnout amongst communities of color and amongst undocumented people in our state and in our country. And I am concerned not only about resources that come to Connecticut, because our state last year received $11 billion, right? That's half of an annual budget for Connecticut. And these are funds that go directly to cities and towns across the state. This is a huge part of Bridgeport's budget, New Haven, Hartford, but also for small towns. So people are probably wondering, what kinds of funding, what does that mean? That means federal school lunch money, money for Head Start, community development block grants, highway and road projects, SNAP, Medicaid monies. These are funding sources that municipalities rely on, and we're already a state that is number 48 amongst the 50 in terms of getting back very little compared to what we give to the federal government. That's why this count is so critical. And it is my strong belief that the motivation behind putting a citizenship question on there is to deter people from coming forward. And if they don't come forward, financial resources are robbed and political power is redistributed. And that's one of the uses of the census, is to redistrict both for the state legislature and at the federal level.
That was Lieutenant Governor Susan Bizewit speaking with Ron Ropiak. We'll have more of their conversation after our break. If you have a question or comment, share them with us. You can email them to us at tfs@wshu.org. And on Twitter, we're at FullStoryWSHU. And now you can also find us on Instagram at Full Story Radio. We'll take a quick break and we'll be right back. This is The Full Story. I'm Rebecca Saran in for Ron Ropiak. We're talking about the U.S. Census today. Let's get back to Ron's interview with Lieutenant Governor Susan Bizewitz.
So we were just talking about whether people would be discouraged from filling out the census. We were speaking about the citizenship question, and there is still a question about whether that will be on the United States Census forms this spring when we receive them or not. And on the same day last week that the Supreme Court decided that that question should not be included, there was also a case about gerrymandering. And the Supreme Court decided in that case that state courts, not federal courts, will make decisions about redistricting at the federal level, which is a surprise. You would think that the federal government and our federal courts would want control over that process. But I bring up the gerrymandering case because I do believe one of the reasons the president would like to include the citizenship question is that he wants to drive down turnout amongst immigrant communities and communities of color, particularly the Latino community.
There are some commentators who believe that if it doesn't make it onto it this time, the citizenship question doesn't make it onto the census this time, that the Trump administration is setting groundwork to have it included at least on the next census, another 10 years from now. Does that concern you?
Right now, what concerns me is what we need to do to get prepared for the 2020 census, because in the spring of 2020, in March, those forms are going to go out. There is a massive effort, both at the federal level and at the state level, to get prepared. And that was part of the urgency associated with the Supreme Court deciding the citizenship question case, because it takes a long time to print 140 million forms that will be sent to every household. And for the future, as I look at our United States Constitution, which has been in place since 1790, we've never collected information about people on the basis of their citizenship status. And we'll just have to see how things unfold. We have a presidential election coming up in 2020, and it will be up to whoever is the next president to determine whether that question might be on a future census. I will say that the census was never intended to be a political document. It was intended for our country to see who we are, and it was intended to be used to allocate resources to each state.
You mentioned money before, and I believe the total amount that is distributed to the states is close to $900 billion to all the states. And as you mentioned, Connecticut gets about $11 billion of that. Mm-hmm. From the political point of view, I wanted to pick your brains on this one because I found this interesting. I was listening to a GOP strategist the other week after the ruling, and he said, I'm perplexed as to why the Trump administration is fighting this. He said, let the census go forward because from his point of view, it will show the migration of so many people to southern states. Red states, if you will. And he said the census could only help the Republicans. So from a political point of view, what do you think of that?
I think that each state has to do their own count, and hopefully it is a complete one. And then we can assess who is where. He could be right. I will say that there have been emails discovered by the daughter of another GOP strategist, Dr. Heffler, mm-hmm. who wrote that the addition of that question would discourage young Latino voters and immigrants from filling out those forms, and that would be a political benefit to the GOP. Now, whether you believe that or not doesn't matter, but I think it just shows that GOP strategists can be on, can hold different points of view.
When you go across Connecticut, what are you hearing?
I think generally there is a frustration among people who are citizens and people who are not, because we are a state of immigrants. You know, the only question is, when did your family come to Connecticut? So, for instance, in my family, I'm of Polish, Greek, and Italian descent, and my grandparents, both paternal and maternal, came to this country. There are others who have just come and become citizens, or, you know, their parents came. And some, that's the only thing that distinguishes people in Connecticut. I think people in Connecticut appreciate that diversity is our strength, that immigrants bring their talent, their work ethic, new perspectives, new culture to our state. And I think that's really important. And people from across the state have expressed their frustration with the vilification of immigrants. It is not a weakness. It is immigrants are our strength. Mm. And this weekend, actually Friday evening, there are a whole series of events, and they're called Lights for Liberty. There are a series of vigils being held across Connecticut. I know that I've been invited to speak at a number of them. And those are to highlight the poor treatment of children and adults at our border who are immigrants, who are coming here for a better life. But it is just despicable to see, you know, children being taken from their parents, living literally in cages without appropriate food and sanitation, not a toothbrush, not access to clean water to drink or to bathe with. It's terrible. That's not who we are as a country. And I think there's such a frustration that there are going to be dozens of these Lights for Liberty events across the state to show how people are very frustrated by this treatment of people at our borders.
Are they scared?
I mean, yes, yeah. I think.
I mean, are they hiding in their homes, in their apartments?
Yes, I will say they are, and here's why I say that, because this isn't something that has just happened at our borders. There was a case in Stamford where a mother was set to be deported, and she was very concerned about her daughter, who had a very difficult case of diabetes, and the mom wanted to stay and care for her daughter, but had to have an ankle bracelet. And in Meriden, You have people staying in churches to avoid being taken. We had similar cases in New Britain and Old Lyme. There was a church in Old Lyme, Connecticut, where an immigrant stayed for months, and they couldn't leave because they were concerned that the parents would be deported. So church members were rallying and supporting the family. But this is not something that is happening only at the borders. It is something that has already happened. Parents have been deported in Meriden, in New Haven, New Britain, other parts of our state. Mm. And fortunately, Senator Blumenthal, Congresswoman DeLauro, Congressman Himes have stood up for law-abiding people who were paying taxes, who were homeowners, who were working, who are caring for their kids, who are in our school systems and are going to be part of our state's future.
I have you for another 45 seconds with that.
It goes by so fast.
It does go by fast with the 45 seconds. In your heart of hearts, do you think the citizenship question will stay off the census this time around and you can go forward with the thought that it won't be on it?
I certainly hope so. Regardless, I will be out making sure that people in Connecticut understand that they shouldn't be afraid to complete the census.
That was Connecticut Lieutenant Governor Susan Beiswitz speaking with Ron Ropiak. Joining us now is Rebecca Sannon. She's president and CEO of the Health and Welfare Council of Long Island. Rebecca, welcome to The Full Story.
Thank you.
Can you describe for us, before we get to the census, what the council's work is about and with at-risk and vulnerable communities on Long Island?
Absolutely. So we're an umbrella organization for the health and human services sector on Long Island. We work on issues ranging from immigration to food security, housing issues, anti-poverty work, everything that impacts our neighbors who are struggling the most from a systems perspective as well as a symptoms perspective to make sure we're improving lives.
So is the council doing any work specifically around the 2020 census?
Yes, actually, we are leading the effort on Long Island, partnering with both the Nassau and Suffolk County executives and other elected officials. We put together two very robust complete count committees with about 12 subcommittees focusing on strategic development of plans to meet the needs of our hardest to count communities. Suffolk and Nassau County are the fourth and fifth, respectively, hardest to count counties in our state. So we have a formidable challenge in order to make sure that our neighbors are counted and that our region gets its fair share.
Why are they hard to count?
For a number of different reasons. Certainly, while a lot of times Long Island is understood to be a land of, you know, Great Gatsby and opulence, that's certainly the historical understanding of our region. It couldn't be further from the truth. We don't have pockets of poverty anymore. We have pockets of wealth. There have been significant demographic shifts. So we struggle tremendously with poverty in our region. We struggle with a lack of affordable housing. So a lot of folks do not have addresses that are registered because they're living multiple families and single family dwelling units. So folks aren't going to hear from the census for that reason. Tremendous geographic sprawl. So the ability to message to our communities about what needs to happen is determined by the opportunities to message. And we also have fractured layers of government. We have, you know, 13 towns and 95 incorporated villages and 124 school districts. So coordination in our region is challenging, and we don't have an infrastructure that allows us to do that, which is why we put together such a robust effort so early on.
So as you ramp up for the census, regardless of the question is on the survey or not, what are you hearing from residents that you work with?
I mean, certainly when we're talking about the immigrant community, the most significant challenge we have in the 2020 census is going to be counting the immigrant community. And I need to be very clear whether or not the question is on the census. Damage has been done. We're living in a climate of fear. Our immigrant community is living in a climate of fear. People are choosing to get off of benefits that they're entitled to for family dissolution, fear of deportation. And because of that, people have altered how they're living their lives. And so the idea of, you know, raising your hand and saying to a government that has been very clear that you're not wanted, or that has been very clear with its sweeping generalizations linking immigrants to crime, here I am, I want to be counted, it's really a challenge. And it's something that we're working very hard to address.
How are you working to address that? I mean, on the federal books, there are laws that protect privacy in terms of the way the census is used. How are you trying to get that message across to the undocumented immigrants?
So there's a couple things I would say to your question. I mean, first of all, yes, there are laws, but when people turn on the news and see families being torn apart at the border and children living in cages, and we know that families here on Long Island are caged with fear, you know, living in the cage of fear in terms of how they're living their lives, assurances are challenging. Certainly Title 13 protects information from being shared with any other entity, but this is not a time in which we're living where people feel that there's trust in law or that there's even trust in law enforcement, quite frankly, not because of any specific actions of individual law enforcement entities, but because at the federal level, we have a climate that says that people's rights are second to law and order. And so people are very scared.
So I get this, I get the sense that you anticipate an undercount on Long Island?
I certainly do not. We are building an army. We are building a tremendous army on Long Island that consists of faith-based leaders, business sector leaders, superintendents in school districts, nonprofit leaders, community leaders, senior citizen organizations. Every hard-to-count community is being represented in very meaningful ways, and we have really carefully analyze the work we're doing to make sure that, you know, a lot of times when people talk about the immigrant community, they think of the South American immigrant community, but our immigrant community is very diverse. So making sure that we have everybody at the table and that we're working now to spread the message about the importance of the census. At the core of it, people have come here, they've experienced tremendous pre-migration, migration, and post-migration trauma. And they've done that because they desperately want public safety and opportunity and hope for their families, just like any of us. And when you've gone through such extraordinary circumstances and, you know, fostered such resilience in your family, it's so important to know that the census is truly the number one thing that a parent can do to secure their child's future and to secure the future of their region, because it funds our schools, because it funds our roads, and because it funds the programs that people rely on, like Medicaid, like SNAP, like Section 8 housing, like children's health insurance and special education and national lunch programs and Head Start. And so if we want our communities to thrive, we all have an interest in making sure that every single human being is counted.
You mentioned the funding that results, the $900 billion that is part of the funding resulting from the census, and Medicaid. You mentioned a moment ago something interesting about individuals who are eligible for certain health care coverage are now in this climate of fear pulling away and not seeking that out. Can you explain that to us?
Sure. So over a million women and babies nationally have dropped off of WIC in the last year. WIC is the program that provides nutritional security to babies 0 to 5 and their moms. We, as an umbrella organization working with all different health and human service agencies, get calls every single day of people who are dropping off of Medicaid, who are dropping off of SNAP, who are dropping off of WIC, who are dropping off of programs. And a lot of times, children and parents might be American citizens, but maybe grandma isn't. A lot of people live in mixed immigration homes. And the fear is so significant right now of family dissolution, of being torn apart in violent ways and not being able to sustain your family, that people are dropping off of basic need programs, things like being able to feed their families. And they're suffering, and they're living invisible lives, and it's unconscionable. It's unconscionable in America in 2019 that this is what we're facing, but it's reality. And so I think it's really important to understand and validate that fear, and then to work as hard as we can to build trust and to identify trusted messengers to go out in communities and to really get people to complete the census and sustain their families and communities by doing so.
And I understand very briefly, you sign up about 4,000 people every year just to SNAP alone. So there's a lot of work that's being done, and a lot of people are taking advantage. Rebecca, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Rebecca Sannon, President and CEO of the Health and Welfare Council of Long Island. I'd like to introduce two more guests. Joining us now, Sandra Dunn is the Associate Director of OLA of Eastern Long Island. OLA stands for Organization Latino Americana. And Alicia Kinsman is the Senior Staff Attorney for Assistance at the Connecticut Institute for Refugees and Immigrants, also known as CIRI. Alicia and Sandra, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Sandra, I understand with a different organization that you had worked on the 2010 census, the run-up to that census. How would you compare the difference between the lead-in to the 2010 census and the 2020 census?
Right. So for 10 years, I worked for the Hagedorn Foundation, which was a foundation focused on social equity with immigration and families, children, and youth, and civic engagement being its three main areas of focus. And along with a number of other funders on Long Island, we started an initiative to fund community-based organizations to do census education, outreach, mobilization to help community members in hard-to-count communities, not exclusively the immigrant community, but hard-to-count communities, be able to understand the importance of the census. So to compare the 2010 and the 2020 situations, I'm no longer a funder, but in just thinking federally, from everything I've read and understand, there is less funding at this point from the federal level from the government for the census. So this is not good news that at this point we have less funding than we did in 2010 to even conduct an accurate count. And this is not a good situation because this makes it more likely that there will be an undercount. The Urban Institute, for example, has produced an organization study that says that, you know, there is likely to be an undercount, that certain groups are at high risk for an undercount. So what Rebecca Sannon of the Health and Welfare Council Association of Long Island was saying is very, very important, that the community-based organizations, you know, work very, very hard to ensure that their communities get counted. So the the groups of people that are at risk for an undercount are Latino and Black communities, meaning African Americans as well as Black immigrants, that there could be up to a 3.5% undercount in the 2020 census, and also children under the age of 5, according to this Urban Institute report, are at risk of being undercounted by up to 6.3%. So that's pretty substantial when we're looking at the national numbers. You know, all the more reason to have plenty of funding going towards an accurate census, and then funding on the ground for community-based organizations.
And Sandra, I would think one big difference also is the use of social media and the dangers of misinformation in the 2020 census being spread through social media.
Right, exactly. And that's why, again, it's so important that the complete count committees in all the different states, different counties, and locally, and of course community-based organizations are part of those complete count committees, that we do everything possible to get the word out. Now, an issue with that, however, is that it takes funding to be able to get the word out most effectively, right? So some organizations may not have the funding to dedicate themselves, you know, a large percentage of their staff to making sure that communities that they work in are educated about this. However, even without funding, organizations can do a lot. So organizations with small capacity, staffs can, every time they give a public presentation, for example, they can make sure that they are also talking about the importance of filling out the census. And they can also use social media in the most positive way that social media can be used, which is to, you know, organize communities online and make sure that the good information gets out there as well. But there is, you know, there will be funding available for community-based organizations. It's never enough. But in New York State, for example, the New York State government in 2010 offered $2 million for the entire state for community-based organizations to receive state grants in order to do their work in their communities and educate communities about the importance of filling out the census. This year, it looks like the state is going to provide much more funding. We don't have the parameters on that and who will be eligible, but, you know, something like $20 million. The New York City Council is looking to provide $40 million. And there is a group of funders statewide that have gotten together, and something like 1 million at this point will be coming from philanthropy. So that request for proposals will be issued to community-based organizations in August. So the more funding that there can be, not only at the federal level to get an accurate census, but also at the state and local level to fund community-based organizations to do the work of creating trust, that this funding is going to be critical. And trust is the big issue here. Your show has very appropriately focused a lot on the citizenship question. Beyond that question, however, is simply trust in government, and certainly for immigrant communities, that's a big challenge. We were just in a church this past Sunday giving a Know Your Rights presentation to immigrant community members because of the threat of ICE raids that this current administration has put out there. And so that's what's on people's minds, you know, is how can I protect my family? And Rebecca, your earlier guest, was speaking to that some. So when that's in people's minds, then how in the world do you convince them that it's the right thing to do to fill out the census form? And, you know, that's our job, to make sure that they understand that filling out the census form in the long run is good for their families and for their communities, because it means, you know, more access to healthcare. Healthcare clinics are more likely to pop up in communities where the population has been accurately counted, for example. More availability of jobs, better more resources in the classroom, teachers and books, and even for reduced and free lunch. So these are issues and benefits that help the entire community, not just a certain segment of the community.
And Alicia, what are you hearing from the communities that you work with regarding the 2020 census?
Yeah, I mean, really similarly, there is just so much fear, and that is exacerbated by all of the misinformation that spreads just so rapidly. You know, as was just said, under the current administration, immigrants of all statuses everywhere, and including here in Connecticut, are really struggling to just function in their daily lives amidst this growing climate of fear. You know, daily, weekly, there is anti-immigrant rhetoric and information and misinformation coming from coming quickly and from various sources and spreading even quicker. And the clients that I work with are terrified. I primarily work with immigrant survivors of serious crimes, and they especially are so vulnerable. You know, they already face significant barriers in overcoming their trauma, in escaping violence and reporting crimes. And in this current environment, they are even more terrified of even just calling the police, getting protective orders, renewing protective orders. Even, you know, I had some clients even who have temporary lawful status scared just to bring their kids to school, because the idea of engaging with, interacting with, communicating with any government agency or entity might somehow put them on a radar, might somehow put them in the focus and put their lives at risk, because we're talking about people for whom the threat of deportation is just not some inconvenience of being uprooted from their lives or uprooted from their educational and employment opportunities, but rather the threat of being sent back to a place where they left running, to a place where they feel that their life is in danger.
Right.
I was just going to add that the idea of, you know, filling, you know, documenting with the government your immigration status, it just takes it to a new level. Sorry.
I was going to ask you if it's almost too much to ask them to make the connection with money and services offered as a result of them filling out the census, the potential for opportunities in education, healthcare. They're really operating more in survival mode.
I agree that many of the clients that I work with are absolutely operating in survival mode. I think that the task is a difficult one, but you know, as has just been discussed, it's so important. It is critical. You know, many of the survivors I work with, their kids are receiving very important services through their municipality or through the state. So it is just a what seems like this insurmountable challenge if this question moves forward.
Could I jump in there?
Absolutely. Go ahead, Sandra.
Thank you. So census participation, I think, is the way I've always looked at it, is that it's in a way the first step or a first step that any community member can take, regardless of whether they were born here or not, regardless of immigration status, a first step, a first position, if you will, on the spectrum of civic engagement. So if we say that voting and being very, very involved in your community and things like that are on the other end of the spectrum. For people who are, you know, very civically engaged and civic-minded, filling out the census is a first step. So it is, in a way, a tall order. I wouldn't say, however, that it is too much to ask because, again, it is up to local governments, it's up to complete count committees, and it's up to community-based organizations to make those vital connections for the communities that we serve. So, for example, out here on the east end of Long Island, we have very poor and insufficient public transportation. And the distances between towns and hamlets, because we are semi-rural, are far. So we need very good public transportation, very good bus service for our community members who either can't drive because they can't get a license at this moment or don't have cars. So census, an accurate census count, then allows more funding to come not only just for infrastructure like roads, but also for public transportation. So that is, I think, a very concrete point that we can make to communities, that this benefits you directly. But yes, the climate of fear is real. The instability created by the rhetoric that comes down from the federal government and then unfortunately and sadly gets replicated here locally by some organizations and individuals, all of that is very, very real. We're working in a difficult context. We are also working in a context where, because of the change in demographics, the so-called, and this is a census term, the hard-to-count communities and neighborhoods are much more prevalent, and there's a larger percentage of that. So it's estimated that 36% of the New York State population now lives in hard-to-count neighborhoods, hard-to-count folks being people of color, immigrant communities, children, newborns, renters, single parents, and people living in poverty, the homeless. So all of these people constitute now over a third of the New York State population. You know, all the more reason that we need to get funding to do our jobs.
And Sandra, how much more complicated is this, that the language barrier? Many of these people don't speak English.
That's right. So, again, you know, organizations like ours that do primarily serve the Latino immigrant population, we are able to give these presentations and get all our information out in Spanish and English. Going back to the work of the Health and Welfare Council of Long Island and to Rebecca San and the complete count committees that they've set up, they do have a lot of organizations involved that are not limited to the English language. So I believe that Haitian-focused organizations are involved, which, you know, Haitian community is a growing population further west on Long Island, not so much here in the five East End towns. I know that the Census Bureau itself does produce materials in a number of different languages, and we will make sure to, you know, get those materials, make sure that we partner with our usual partners, whether it's houses of worship or local libraries or museums, for example, to do what we can to make sure that materials, not just English, are available. And when I say materials, I mean posters and flyers and things like that, that those materials are available so that people start to see that that the census is just a regular part of being in this country and that there is nothing to fear here.
I guess you have the backdrop, though, Alicia, of the president talking about he's ready to mobilize
the ICE raids to initiate that roundup. What are you hearing from individuals and communities that you work with regarding the potential ICE raids?
Yeah, I mean, it's just sheer terror. And, you know, I just want to also say that, you know, I don't want to minimize the importance of the census and census data, especially for vulnerable and underserved populations. I agree. I just think that we also need to recognize the challenge in its fullness and how great it is so that agencies, committees, and the feds themselves can take the appropriate steps and Sandra, as you've said, funding to really tackle it. You know, clients, I get calls daily. You know, my clients who walk in getting updates about their current pending case, you know, they have a viable form of immigration relief that is in process but is stuck in a backlog. And even they are, you know, asking me, well, what do I need to have drafted up in case I'm caught up in that raid? Or what should I carry with me in case the raids target me? They are certain that they may get caught up in one of them and one of these, and that their whole life will be turned asunder in just moments. And again, these are individuals in those specific instances who actually do have a something that is in process that could potentially grant them at least a temporary lawful status here. There's, you know, even I work with immigrants of all different statuses, and even those who have permanent lawful status, asylees and refugees, for example, individuals who have been granted asylum or entered the U.S. as refugees, even they are terrified that they may do something wrong, that the benefit that they're receiving, even though they're eligible to receive it, may put them at risk of also being removed or being the target for a raid or removal from the U.S.
And Sandra, very briefly, about 30 seconds, are you optimistic that with all of the efforts of all of the organizations that you will be able to get the results that you're hoping in terms of the response to the survey?
I'm optimistic that organizations on Long Island are going to do what they can to make sure that we get the word out and try to create some kind of environment of trust. I am optimistic, too, that with the more funding that we get, the better people will be, these organizations will be able to do their jobs. And so I'm very pleased that New York State is committing money to this and very pleased that Philanthropy New York has an organization, a network of funders that will be committing money to this.
Alicia Kinsman, Sandra Dunn, thank you so much for joining us today, talking about the 2020 census.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to The Full Story. I'm Rebecca Saran in for Ron Ropiak, and we'll see you next time.